deadly. And one of its traits is to leave a layer of a greenish slime across the top of the water. And this is mild. I've seen this part of Ganges Harbor really covered with this stuff. And it has to do with the lack of circulation in there. You know, it'll probably appear this summer. But indigenous people attributed that to the smoky, the presence of it. And it was believed to live here. So I think this would be something to be cautious about. Nobody talks about it because it's this supernatural being, which now adorns the front of the library here. But anyway, this is what people were cautious of in the Ganges area. Place names could also be general in nature. Shiloh, very specific to that place. But here is Grace Islet, and it's known as a Shmuck-Ela. Shmuck-Ela. A container for bodies. So the containers could be coffins, canoes, cairns, which exactly you'll find Shmuck-Ela all over the place. In fact, almost any little island off of the mainland of Sultring Island is probably a burial island, a former burial island. Or I guess it still is a burial island. Anyway. So this is a general term for a burial place. So that's sort of the Ganges area. Now we're going to move to the south end and look at some place names here. And here you can see where the Saanich versions start creeping up because of the proximity of the Saanich winter villages and traditional use of the area. So we're going to look at Hwamet some and then some of these other ones. So Hwamet-Etsen. It's for any help to meet them and some Chotan speakers. I have to apologize for my pronunciation. Because I'm a student of it, I'm not a fluent. Hwamet-Etsen, Hwamet-Etsen. Hwa, place, met, bent over, back. So Etsen refers to the back of something bent over. This is a bent over place, and it relates to an origin story. So here's a place name that relates to an origin story, which is called a Shwain, which just means the story. And these are important stories that were preserved in the landscape, and the stories were attached to these rock formations, and the place existed as a teacher to remind people of this story. And this story about Hwamet-Etsen, why is he bending over? It's because it's a story that involves distant areas like Smokwet, which is Point Roberts, a place over in Ladysmith, which I don't have the name for. Sheshakun, a monster that lives over in on the other side of Sansom Narrows. Some say still is there. And Hwamet-Etsen, the mountain. And the story, I won't get into all the details. It's a well-known story. I'm sure you could find it on other sites. But it shows you how place names, especially these really ancient ones, were distributed over quite a large area that people used. Ancient history. Smokwet, for example, Point Roberts was probably the center of the Coast Salish world, and the story talks about this man there throwing, you know, boulders to the four corners of the earth, and one episode talks about him, you know, destroying this monster over here by flinging these huge boulders with his sling. And it kept bouncing off the mountain. The mountain was in the way. Then he called on the mountain to bend over, and it did. And he got a clear shot and killed Sheshakun. Knocked off his lower jaw because it was a giant head. You can see it if you go to the end of that trail in Bourgogne Bay where the daffodil field is and look across. In the light, you'll see this big head there without his lower jaw because Smokwet's knocked it off. So these stories are preserved. And, you know, this story is a long, involved story and with a lot of teachings in it. I won't go into the detail, but the geography preserves the story. So this is looking at Hwamet-Etsen from Maple Bay. And you can really see the bent over shape of the island. And here's one of the rocks that Smokwet's through. This one's an active pass, calls White Rock. And the other one is over here. They call it Paddy Miles Stone today. The Smokwet's through four boulders altogether before he killed the monster. This is a glacial erratic. You can see this as you leave Galliano or Active Pass on your left on Gossip Island. Giant erratic glacial boulder. So in a way, it did come down out of the sky, you know, eventually. So a lot of these stories. I haven't looked into all the geological aspects of it, but the ancient geomorphology. I mean, where they've done this elsewhere in BC, they find a lot of connections between these origin stories and physical features. Here's a place, needs no introduction. A lot of people know about Hwaq Fum. And the name means female merganser duck. And you can see the Hwaq part in there, which is great because, you know, a lot of the indigenous words reflect the sounds that the animals make or the birds make. And that shows you how ancient that language is, you know, because there's no other, you know, that's the name of, you know, when a tree frog goes, Hwakas, you know, that's its name. It's not tree frog, it's Hwakas, and so on. So I urge you, if you want to get into the indigenous languages, I would start imitating the sounds of birds and stuff. And believe me, you know, it sounds funny, but it will actually help you. So Hwaq Fum, merganser duck, the feathers were important in ritual. This was also a place, valued by Halkaminam and people from Cowichan, especially Clem Plumlets, and people from Penelakut as well. There's other place names. Why is that one there? Just a minute. Okay. I'm going to do this first. This is Mount Tuam. There's an English name that preserves an indigenous name. It's been corrupted. It's not Tuam from somewhere in Ireland. It's derived from Twain or Schwine. Now, this is an interesting combination. This is the Sanchotan word. That's the Halkaminam one. And people are very kind of vague about the meaning of this, but it has something to do with the shape of the land here, coming down straight to the water. And it's very noticeable if you're coming from, Schwartz Bay, and you're coming along, you go beneath it. I mean, it's like this massive, swaying, the land comes straight down to the bottom. There's also another name associated with this place, and I can't reveal the actual location where this name is, because it's a very sacred place somewhere on that mountain. And it's Sahalakan. And there's a lot of stories of Sahalakan published. You can find them if you look for them in various books and, put out by First Nations and by non-Indigenous people. But it's a great story about a man who acquires incredible supernatural powers from the Thunderbird, but abuses his power, and as a result, he is killed. That's a very, very short version of that story. But again, it's one of these stories that has cultural teachings in it. So, in the Native culture, you went on a vision quest and you got power. And you never talked about it. You just kept it to yourself because you didn't know what the heck you had. And people knew what you had when you came back and demonstrated through your abilities. In this case, he had these incredible powers and misused them to enslave people, to kill them. So no good, Nick. He was killed. And so this story in the place is still a powerful place. Like, people recognize the power because this guy was a powerful man, but more on the evil side. So this is a place, people won't divulge the location, but it's up in there somewhere. Don't go looking for it. One of my favorite place names, one of the first I ever learned, Quinatnitz. And here are the different versions. The Senchothan spelling, orthography developed by Dave Elliott, and the Halkaminam version. And I've seen different versions because the Halkaminam, the various dictionaries, they haven't really come up with a consistent kind of orthography, but, working on it. This is the one I kind of prefer in my work these days, is the Quinetnet, is the IPA, the phonetic alphabet, and I worked a little bit with Larry Grant, who's a Musqueam Halkaminam speaker, elder, and he really prefers this method of writing indigenous languages because with the IPA, you can write any language in the world. You can learn any language. He's part Chinese. He went to China, and he was reading Chinese through the phonetics. But he said he could teach it through phonetics anyway. That's the one I prefer because it's universal and you get the actual pronunciation. But Quinetnets, very interesting word. It's if you compare it with Satnets, Satnets is the name for the Saanich Peninsula. And it means land rising. It means actually the rear end rising to the sky, rising up. And the rear end is Mount Newton, Lakshmanu, is the Tsongkhapa name. So this is not Wasatnet, this is Huenatnet. So it's a lower end, or it's the rear end being lowered. So there's some kind of a strange opposition here between the rear end lowered, or move your butt over, or there's many different translations, and Sanich. So there's kind of an interesting kind of parallel there. And same with Huenatnet, you know, it's the butt. Nuts means the butt. Huetlatnet, Maple Bay, it means deep bottom. So a descriptive place name. And I talked to one elder, the Leary Sam, and he suggested that the name might have some reference to the little estuary that used to be behind the Fulford Inn. You know, it's kind of a little, real bottom end. So I'm not sure. But when you interview elders about this, you often get a lot of laughter because there's other stuff in it they're not telling me. Sithnaa is Beaver Point to us. Also a well-known place, campground. There's a lot of fresh water there. It was a popular stopping place for people on their way to the Fraser River. The Fraser River was the economic engine of this area. The Coast Salish culture here would not exist without the sockeye fishery. That was their economy. It was destroyed in the 19th century, and they were impoverished because they lost their livelihood, basically. The interesting word about this, the interesting thing about this word, Sithnaa, it's another sort of descriptive place name that you find in a lot of different areas. Like here's Sithnaa in Vancouver. And this is the old Marpole village site at the one end of the Arthur Lang Bridge. Remember a few years ago, there was a protest because they're going to build a condo there, and they started disturbing all these ancient graves. It's a very ancient, huge village site. Sithnaa. Here, it's about a mile or so inland from the ocean, whereas here, right on the ocean, that name means to be hit by the tides. So Sithnaa here, this ancient village is now a mile from the shore, used to be hit by the tides 2,000, 3,000 years ago. But the names apply here, and it's the same name in both Hukamitam and Tsongkhapa. So we know it as Beaver Point. This is my segue now into the next kind of era of place names, which is the beginning of the colonial period. And the USS Beaver, of course, was the first steamship on the Pacific coast, and it was in the employ of the Hudson's Bay Company, who was given the charter to, that should be 1852, not 852, and given the charter to establish a colony on Vancouver Island. Now, this is a really interesting map that was produced in 1852. It was published in 1854. So the colony of Vancouver Island had begun around 1849. It was up and happening. This shoreline was all well known here. And they began negotiating land sale agreements with the local indigenous people, the different groups all around Victoria. They based them on Maori land sale agreements, some with my tribe in New Zealand, which is kind of interesting. And I'm working now on a book on the showing the connections between those events. So in 1852, there was word about a coal field in Nanaimo. And so Douglas, you know, he was kind of despairing of the colony because it's not the greatest place in the world. They were vastly outnumbered by native people, there were hardly any settlers. And the discovery of coal was like an oil well. So in 1852, he and Pemberton, his land sort of guy, took a canoe journey. And look at this area here. It's totally unrecognized. They didn't know anything about this area. This was all based on an earlier map, but this was all uncharted territory. And you can see, like, the Cowichan River and the Chemainus River joined together. They just don't know anything. And here's Salt Spring, though, and there's the first, earliest name for Salt Spring Island. It was Tron Island. And of course, that was not the name for the island. That was the name for, you know, Swain, what we saw earlier, Mount Tuam and Cape Keppel area. And so what had happened, they came around this point here, and, you know, Pemberton looked at this huge, you know, this massive Mount Tuam coming down to the sea and said, you know, what's the name of that? And the indigenous guy, who was probably Tsongkhapa speaking, said, oh, that's Tron. And so Douglas thought it referred to the whole island. So that's where that name kind of came. And there's a Tron Island. So they weren't too happy with this map. They said, oh, this map needs some work. So in 1853, they got together with the Royal Navy and did a slightly better map, but not that much better. The coolest thing about this map are some of the names that appear on it. So you can't see it from this, but I'll show you. So this is 1853. This is the first map that shows the name Salt Spring on it. But anyway, this is the name. But before that, this is the name for Salt Spring. So what do you say? I think maybe this would be a good name to get back to. Can you imagine Ranfurly Island? Yeah. Are you going to Ranfurly this weekend? I don't think so. Who the heck's this guy? So I just Googled it, and the only Ranfurly I could come up with was an Irish peerdom, the Earl of Ranfurly, and it was created around 1830, so there must have been somebody in Hudson's Bay Company knew the Earl, said, I'm going to name the big island after the Earl. But this is the most interesting thing up there in that tiny little print. What do you see is the earliest recorded mention of Salt Spring Island. Salt Spring. And very definite about where it is, at the very extreme end of the north end of the island. So that's Salt Spring. That's the original, that's the clay plump. And obviously somebody said, what do you guys call this place? Clay plump. And what does that mean? Salt. Oh, we'll call it Salt Spring. So it was an English name that was established by 1853 and spelt in two words, by the way. But that's probably just, but that's just in all fairness, to fit the shape. Because it quickly reverted to Salt Spring, one spelling. Anyway, Ranfurly, see you later. So this is where a lot of place names began to appear, with the British Boundary Commission between 1857 and 1860. So what's going on during this time? The Americans and the British government are starting to, dispute the border, fight over it. They decided, we got to do a proper map. We have these crappy maps from the HBC, Ranfurly, what the hell's that? And so they engaged Captain George Henry Richards, a British naval officer, and this is his ship, the HMS Plumper, to head the British Boundary Commission. So the Plumper, was acting on behalf of the British, for Great Britain, and the Americans had their own, survey vessels. So a lot of the place names you encounter in the Gulf Islands today, Active Cal, all these places, are a direct result of this survey that was done in this time period. And this was,
Salt Spring was one word.
Yeah, it was one word. I thought I said that, but I'm talking so fast. Yeah, Salt Spring was one word now. Actually, he changed the name, but we'll get to it. George Richards, and he was these British naval officers, they all weren't a bunch of imperialists. Of course, they were working for the greatest imperial power in the planet. But he was very sympathetic to indigenous land claims and often commented on it. I would get a copy of this journal if you want to read about his history. It's a year or two in the field, his personal journal. He talks about Salt Spring it's quite good. But anyway, he was responsible for a lot of the names that we're going to look at right now. And a lot of the names derived from this illustrious vessel, the HMS Ganges, which was in a small harbor between 1857 and 1860. It's very unlikely, in fact, almost impossible, this ship ever saw Salt Spring. So Richards is going around naming places, and he's drawing upon the men and and their wives and anything associated with this ship and other things for place names, because he's going around, what do you call this point? I don't know. What's your sister's name? Almost. So HMS Ganges was never here, but a very famous ship. This is the flagship of the Royal Navy in the Northern Pacific, and Admiral Baines was the commander, and was here to kind of supervise the boundary, because they were worried about San Juan Island was in dispute and would be in dispute for another 15 years or so, when it was decided unfavorably in favor of the Americans. We really had the prior claim, and it's through the Songhees, actually. And I won't get into that. That's another call to San Juan Island. We should take it back. Admiral. He's a big fan of the Admiralty, George Richards. So he named Salt Spring Island Admiral Island. And he also gave a lot of other names. Now, this is the interesting thing. This is the first appearance of the Salt Springs settlement. That was the first organized non-indigenous settlement on the island, where a group of men landed here at Walker's Hook, made their way, and selected 200-acre lots between Walker's Hook and up here. And that became the Salt Springs settlement. So here it's documented at 1860. So the admiral, who's the admiral? It's this guy, what's his name here? Rear Admiral Lambert Baines. Robert Lambert Baines. And, you know, he didn't have that illustrious military career or anything, but he was here during this very critical period, you know, where the British were showing the flag and making sure the Americans didn't come in and take over the whole place, which was, you know, a great worry. So there was a bit of tension in that period. But anyway, so Richard was doing his job, and he began naming places on Salt Spring Island. So Studley Point was named after James Lowther Studley, who was the secretary to the admiral here on the Ganges. So, what other names? He also, interestingly enough, and we'll talk about it a little more. He named some places after the early settlers. Walker Hook. Edward Walker was a captain of a couple of steam-powered boats that went up and down the coast here in this area, delivering mail and stuff, a very important service. And he was also one of the first preempters here. But he never, I don't think he ever lived on Salt Spring. But his name has been given to, you know, Walker Hook and Walker Rock. So obviously his buddies with Richard, or Richard recognized his...
But did Southey and Admiral live on Salt Spring?
No, they had nothing to do with the place. they were on the boat, and they probably never came here. Dock Point. Now it's called Dock Point. Change the name to that. Dock Point. That was the first sort of public wharf on the island. It was located here and on a black settler's preemption. And he was later murdered. And Ubik has all kinds of conspiracy theories about he was murdered by white men. But it actually was. He was killed by Native people for whatever reason. Other names? Now this is really interesting. I said Richards was sympathetic to a lot of indigenous claims, and he actually recorded a lot of indigenous sites, not by the indigenous name, but by a reference to them, like Idle Island, which is a burial island off north of Vesuvius. The Lamalchi tribe moved a lot of the bodies in the 1880s back to Lamalchi Bay. But there's still, you know, it's still a burial island. I don't know if a lot of people know that, but...